proud of Jennifer. She sang that song and she means it. She was trained secularly as well as her new husband. The old one is gone now. And she and her husband, they just married just a few weeks ago. Both of them were trained in a secular field for secular positions, and you can imagine what she could have made in a secular world and what they could have done in a secular world. But I'm proud of her for another reason. She's the first female voice to student I've ever taught. And I thank you. You think that was good. You ought to hear her sing, "It Will Be Worth It All." You won't believe this. I was preaching in Nassau Wednesday night, and right before I preached, the congregational song was, "It Will Be Worth It All." I wouldn't even look at Ms. Hiles. I wouldn't look at her at all. But I didn't sing it. You'd be very proud of me. I didn't sing it. I want to talk to you tonight on how to be or how to have a good old age. I was sitting there as Louis Owens was talking a while ago, and I thought I'd like to be 37 again, like he is. And then I thought maybe not. I'm not sure that I could do again what God has done through us here at this place and my little ministry. I thought about Warren Spahn and Joe Torre. Warren Spahn is the baseball pitcher who won more games than any left-handed pitcher in the history of major leagues. I think it was 367 games he won. That's more than Dizzy Dean. That's more than Don Drysdale. That's more than Sandy Koufax. That's more than Bob Seaver. That's more than any left-handed pitcher, and more than any modern baseball pitcher, right-handed or left-handed. Joe Torre was a baseball player and then later was the manager of the New York Yankees when they won the World Series. When Joe Torre came on the scene, Warren Spahn was just going off the scene. And Warren Spahn said to Joe Torre, "Young man, I wish I had your future." And Joe Torre quickly said, "Sir, I wish I had your past." I thought about that as Brother Owens was testifying tonight, as I realized wonderful future he has. Future nothing, wonderful present that he has. But I thought about it. Now, you're going to be old someday, unless God takes you home earlier. You're going to be old. This may surprise you, but I was 37 one time. This may surprise you young people. I was a teenager one time. You didn't think they had teenagers back in those days, did you? And I may surprise you. I sang in a beginner choir. My mother says the best singer in the choir, and my mother certainly is a good judge of music. She and I sang together, "The Angels Wept," "Heaven's Flag Was Flown at Half Mast," "David Put His Heart Down, Wouldn't Play." I want to say this tonight. I mean it. I'm a happy old man. I'm 71 years of age, and I'm living in the happiest days of my life. I mean that. I've never been unhappy. I've had reasons to be in the past, but I've never been unhappy. I've always been happy. But I'm living now in the happiest days of my life. I'm living now in the place where I want you to live someday, a long time after I'm in heaven. I want you to live the kind of joyous life that I'm living now. I'm going to tell you tonight how to do it. I could call this a how to be a happy old person, but I think I like the title better, A Good Old Age. All right. in the psalmist said in Psalm 72 and verse 92 and verse 14, "Thy they shall bring forth fruit in old age." In Psalm 71 and 9, he said, "Cast me not off in the time of my old age." In 1 Chronicles 29, 28, it said, "David died in a good old age, full of days and honor." In Genesis 25 and verse 8, or for the Colston preferred, Genesis 33, my men are copying me a great deal. I influence my men. They're all having memory lapses now. In Genesis 25 and verse 8, it says, "Abraham died in a good old age." And then in Psalm 71, verse 18, David said, "Now also when I am old and gray-headed, O God, forsake me not." May I say tonight that I am living in a good old age. And Miss Hiles won't admit we're old, so I can't tell you she's old. She's just a little past 60, and I'm nearly 80. But I am living in a good old age. I don't think I've been as happy in my life as I am tonight. And I want you to have the same thing. Now, let me say this before I go any further. This is going to be a testimony kind of a sermon most of the way. Let me say before I go any further that I have the usual problems of old age. I mean, the usual infirmities and weaknesses of old age. As a young man, I was rather athletic. I was captain of the girls' basketball team at W. Chatterson High School. And I was athletic. I was a paratrooper, as you know. And as a young man, I was required as a paratrooper every day to do 90 push-ups with a full field pack. I'm talking about a 90-pound full field pack on my back. I decided this week, by the way, I had to do 25 of those with one hand, too. 90 with full field pack on my back, and then 25 every day, when I was a paratrooper, 25 push-ups with one hand. I decided this week to see how many I could do. I got down in my office yesterday, and I did what I said what I could do. I did 14 push-ups. I cheated just a little bit, but I think I could call them push-ups. One good thing about it, when I do a push-up at my age and my size, you don't have to go as high off the ground as you used to. I'm saying I got the usual infirmities of old age. As a young man in paratroopers, I had to do every day 25 chin-ups. I mean, with my hands like this. Not like that, but like this, holding the bar. Had to do 25 chin-ups. So I decided to figure out how many I could do. So I got in my office, and I got my hand on the door in the office. I couldn't put it like that because you can't reach through the door. And I will when I get my glorified body, but I decided to see how many push-ups chin-ups I could do. Now let's go on down to the next point. When I was a paratrooper, I had to climb a 35-foot rope every day. I could do it now, but I couldn't find a rope 35 feet, so I didn't try it. When I was a paratrooper, I had to run 10 miles every day. That's with my combat boots on. Had to run 10 miles every day. I don't mean around the track. I mean around a lap. I mean up and down hills on a highway, 10 miles, without stopping, no breaks at all, 10 miles every day. Now, at the age of 71, I do still run 10 laps a day. It's a pretty good distance around my desk, too. I have a big desk, but I run 10 laps around my desk every day. My hearing is bad. I went to the doctor, had my hearing tested, and the doctor said that you've lost 35% of your hearing. At least that's what I think he said. And as you know, I have hearing aids there in my pocket. My pocket can hear very well, and I'll let you hear them again. And I have eye problems. I don't know what's wrong. I don't go to doctors. Doctors are for women. And I don't go to doctors. I don't believe in doctors. Doctors are of the devil. But, now, look, you doctors here, I need your tithe. Don't get mad at me now. But, I had my eyes checked a couple of years ago, and they said you got to have cataract surgery in a couple of years. Well, maybe a couple of years from now, I'm not going to go back. They said, it's time for a checkup. I said, I'll decide when the time for the checkup is. Have a hernia. Had it for 5 years. Ms. Howell said, when are you going to have it checked? I said, they call an autopsy. You've heard me say this before. I have a trust on right now. I've worn a trust for 5 years. My favorite song is Trust and Obey. And I have a hernia. One of my hearing aids is out of order. I'm going to have to go back and have it repaired sometime this week. Ms. Hiles of the day said, pass the gravy. I said, when are you going to join the Navy? And somebody said the day, I think it was Ms. Hiles, not sure who it was, but they said, did you see Ms. McCarroll? And I said, yes, I've eaten a Cracker Barrel. And I'm saying I got the usual signs of old age. My memory is the only thing that's as good as it ever was. In fact, the memory is better than it ever has been. I'm 71 years old, and I can remember things that didn't even happen. And I just thank God for my memory. Two old men are playing golf. They were 71 years of age. One of them said, the other said, hey, Joe, said, I can't see very well now that I'm old. He said, when I hit the ball, would you watch where it goes? The other one said, yeah, sure will. I can see real good. So the old man hit the ball, and the other guy keeps his eye on it, follows it. And the first old man said, did you see where it landed? He said, sure did. He said, where did it land? He said, I forgot. When I wake up in the morning and look at Ms. Hiles and say, good morning, Mary, how are you? There's a problem there of memory. I heard about an old man. Two old men were talking, and one of them said, I'm having trouble with my memory. Both of them are 71 years of age. Having trouble with my memory. Other than said, not me. I used to have trouble. I'm taking some medicine, and that medicine has cured my memory loss. The old man said, what's the name of that medicine? Oh, he said, what's the name of that flower that grows in Tyler, Texas, and has a good smell, and he said, Rose, yeah, Rose, what is the name of that medicine I've been taking? So I know how he feels. And Bob Eau Claire has the same problem. The men's chili supper in July has been changed to an ice cream supper. And my hair, I hate to get on this subject. I got some sad news for you. It's just about passed away. I mean, it just about has passed away. And I'm having the biggest battle you ever saw in your life. I don't want to look like Dick Kennedy. I just don't want to. I don't want to. I don't want folks putting holes in my head and rolling my head down the bowling lane. I just don't want it. And I'm having a time. This house will tell you, I'm really having a time. 45 years ago, I started a battle with my hair. 41 years ago, I went to a place called Thomas Hair People. They said, we can help you to grow hair again. I'm 41 years ago. I've been fighting this battle 41 years. You've been fighting it 51 years, haven't you? But 45 5 years ago, started losing my hair, and 41 years ago, I went to this place called Thomas, 1956 it was, and almost 42 years ago, and they didn't do me any good. Well, I found an answer. I found at the Walgreens drugstore, I found some hairspray that was colored. Your hair was brown, you could get some brown hairspray, and you could spray it on your head, and you couldn't see your scalp through the thinning hair. So I got some of it, and it worked. People said, your hair is getting thicker, until I started sweating one time while I was preaching. Down it came, all the way down. I've tried it all. We had a lady in our church came to me and said, look, she said, I can give you some stuff. You put it on your hair every day, and it'll grow hair. And she said, it's mostly vodka, but it got a few other stuff in it. And if you'll just take this vodka, and I put that stuff on my hair for 6 months, and finally drank the stuff and didn't care whether I had any hair or not. But I tried it all, folks. I have tried it all. One of the great days of my life was when I learned how to wrap my hair. And that made it look thicker. Then that worked for a while. And then it started, the top of my head started getting bald, so I pulled it over like that. And then it got short, so short I couldn't pull it over like that, so I let this side grow, so I could pull this side over like that, and this side over like that, and the back up like that. And I'm trying to help you guys. I'm giving you some lessons tonight that really help you. Now then, they won't meet. I mean, this side won't meet that side. And really, I'm fighting a battle about it. I'm going to do something about it. I'm going to get an implant, transplant, eggplant. I'm going to get something. I can't understand it. I'm not going to be totally bald. I'm not going to get a big toupee. But I may get me a little thing about the size of an earmuff and stick it right up here on the top. I'm just not going to look like you guys. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to look like that. I'm not going to do it. I'm saying I got all the symptoms of old age. I'm going to get me maybe a squirrel's tail or get me a raccoon hide or something. But I'm going to put something up there somewhere. It may be in the back. Or I may become a Jewish rabbi and wear a little hat up there on my head like that. But I'm not going to get totally bald. I promise you that. You see me walk out of here with a little I'm going to look like Sally over here. If you'll notice Sally, he's got hair right there, and that's the only place he's got it. Now understand it. I got hair on my legs, hair on my chest, hair on my face, hair on my eyes, hair on my toes, hair on my hands. I got hair on my neck. I got hair in my nose. Why can't I have some hair on top of my head? Don't understand it. What I'm going to do is this. I've been saving my nose hair, and my hair back here, and hair off my ears. I'm making me a toupee out of my own hair. And people say, is that your hair? Yes, sir, that's my hair. It sure is. Don't laugh at me. I'm dying, folks. Now then, all that aside, these are the most miserable days of my life. Let me explain my text tonight. Cast thy bread upon the waters, for thou shalt find it after many days. Listen carefully. The Egyptian people, or the Egyptian, would cast his seed on the waters of the Nile River. I mean, just take the seed, maybe corn or some kind of bread, some kind of rice, maybe something, and he cast the seed actually on the river. And some folks would think he was crazy. It seemed like a waste of corn. In due time, however, the flood subsides, and the seed sinks into the fertile mud, and rapidly a harvest is produced. That's what this verse means. Cast thy corn or thy bread upon the waters of the Nile River. And when those waters subside, when the flood subsides, it becomes mud and then a harvest. And we've flown down the Nile River, down to Luxor and Karnak, and look down, and just on either side of the Nile River, it's fertile. The rest is desert, but I'd say for probably 100 yards or so on either side of the Nile River, you will find it is green, and there's a harvest there. Now, that's how it happened. They cast their corn upon the water, and then it seems silly. And some folks may have laughed at them. Picture an Egyptian, if you please, saying, "You're wasting your time casting your corn, your seed out on the river in the water, or to put it in the ground." But after a while, the water subsides and the mud makes for a fertile harvest as the seed drops into the ground. They said to me, when I was a young man, "You're wasting your time casting your life," as Brother Owen said a while ago. "You're wasting your time," they said to me. When the Brooklyn Dodgers baseball team offered me a contract back before they moved to Los Angeles, offered me a contract to try to be on the Brooklyn Dodger baseball team, a scout met me at Lake Cliff Park on third base coaching line, and he said, "Son, I'd like to give you a contract, let you sign a contract to be in the Dodger system." And I said, "Sir, I'm not interested. I'm going to be a preacher." He said, "You're wasting your time. You understand that you can make a lot of money playing shortstop?" And he said to me, and I'm quoting him now, "I believe that someday you can be the shortstop of the Brooklyn Dodgers baseball team." And he said, "You're wasting your time." Ladies and gentlemen, you never waste your time scattering seed for God. You never do that. "Cast thy bread upon the waters, and it shall return after many days. He that goeth forth and weepeth, bearing precious seed, shall doubtless come again with rejoicing, bringing his sheaves with him." And I've been casting my seed on the water, and folks have laughed at me all these years. They're not laughing anymore, because I've seen the harvest grow up and the blessings of God in my old age. My Aunt Jenny, the wife of my wealthy multimillionaire uncle, he offered me stock in his company, which made me $250,000 cash. And I said, "Uncle, I can't do it." He wanted me to go to Southwestern Seminary and get my doctor's degree, and I wouldn't go there for $10 million. Maybe 11, but not 10. And my Aunt Jenny, she was a good woman, but she didn't understand that. She said, "Jack," she said, "call me Dr. Hiles." She said, "Jack, you're crazy. You're just crazy. You're going to waste your life. Preachers don't make any money. You're going to waste your life. Why? Why? Well, that's crazy." But bless God, I kept on casting my bread upon the waters and scattering precious seed. "They that sow in tears shall reap in joy." And kept on and kept on and kept on. My dad said to me, I told him I was going to be a preacher, and you've heard me tell the story, and I won't go into it. He said, "You're crazy, son. Being a dirty, blanky, blank, son of a blank preacher, you're crazy." Yeah, a lot of folks have thought I'm crazy, but I'll tell you what, a lot of those folks are in rest homes right now while I'm in the peak days of my ministry. I'm in the zenith of my ministry right now as people who laughed at me and made fun of me, they're crippled and they're living an old age in a rest home somewhere, and the old man keeps on going, traveling and preaching and winning souls and getting people saved and sending out preacher boys and training preachers. Why? Because years ago, I cast my bread upon the waters. And they said, "You're crazy." But the flood subsided, and the harvest is now coming forth. And as an old man, I'm watching the bread come back to me. My Texas University professor said, "You're crazy. You're crazy." Why, he said, "Being a preacher, you'll starve to death and your family will starve." I said, "Not interested in eating and starving. I'm interested in sowing seed. They that sow in tears shall reap in joy." Doesn't say they may reap in joy. Doesn't say they sometimes reap in joy or they could reap in joy. But bless God, it said they shall reap in joy. And it says, "Cast your bread upon the waters and it shall return after their days." My colonel in the paratrooper said to me, "Are you going to be a preacher?" And I said, "Yes." He said, Sergeant Hiles, you're crazy. He said, you've got an IQ, and I didn't know it then. That's where I found out what I had. He said, you've got an IQ of 141. He said, it's the highest IQ in our company. He said, you're crazy. You could do something else. One lady said to me, I went down one year to buy Ms. Hiles a gift. I went down to the Evans Furriers. I didn't buy her fur coat. I bought her a boa, I think it was. And the thing almost bit me as I took it home. We were in Nassau, and it had a park there. And it said we have different animals, and it said we have tame boa constrictors. Ain't no way I'll, tame or not, brother, I don't like them. If they're crawls, I don't want it. I don't like a snake. I don't like a worm. I don't like a baby that learns to walk. I don't like anything that crawls. The lady said to me, she said, you're pretty sharp. What kind of business you in? I said, I'm a Baptist preacher. She said, you don't have to do that. You could do something worthwhile. Brother, you don't do anything more worthwhile than scattering seed for Jesus. I'm saying tonight, if you want to have a good old age, so I die in a good old age like Abraham did, then spend your early days casting your bread upon the waters. Quit your selfishness and quit thinking about yourself. I, me, I, us, we, ours. And think about yourself, not yourself, but somebody else, and cast your bread in the waters, and it shall return. When you get old, you'll live a life of reaping like the old man is doing. For years I've been casting seed. Now I'm enjoying a good old age. Let me share some things with you. I have preacher boys in every state in the union. Every state. I'm talking about Hawaii. I'm talking about Alaska. I'm talking about Utah. I'm talking about Nevada. Every state in the union, I've got preacher boys. I have preacher boys in 45 foreign countries. 45 foreign countries. I was at Bob Gray's not long ago preaching in Longview. And he said, you know Willie Shepherd? I said, sure, I know Willie Shepherd. He goes to church, doesn't he? Yeah. 50 years ago, I was up soul winning one day in East Texas. Came to a house. It was so rickety, didn't have any steps. Had to climb up on the porch. Just a poor old East Texas house. A big, heavy-set lady in there. Mrs. Shepherd was her name. I'm shocked that I remember that name. Mrs. Shepherd. Well, because it's Willie Shepherd's mother. And be sure and look for my ball, goals when I hit it, would you please? What's the name of that that tree? We have one in our front yard. It's called, the park out the college is named after it. Yeah, Beverly. Beverly, what was the name of that lady there? But anyway, I remember that day, Mrs. Shepherd was ironing an old, big heavy set lady. Looked old in those days. She'd be a baby now, but, she was ironing. And there at the ironing board, I wanted a Christ. And she said, I have a daughter. Lives out in the country. She said, won't you go out and see her? And I went out and won her daughter to Christ. Then I won her daughter's husband to Christ. Then I won her teenage boy to Christ. That teenage boy's named Willie Shepherd. Here's my blessing. I said, is Willie Shepherd, is he a member of your church, Dr. Gray? He said, a member. He's in his 60s now, and he's the chairman of my deacon board. Man, I had a spell. I went back at night to my room, made a trampoline out of the bed, and jumped up and down and had a spell. I mean, that one day, out there climbing up on that old porch, had no steps. And Willie Shepherd, now, all these years, now he's chairman of the deacon board for the second largest independent Baptist church in America. I drove down a road in Garland the other day, near Garland, Texas. I remember it over here on the side of the road. I set up a tent one time. Little old tent, seated about 200 people. I had a revival there. Preached every night in that revival and told the people. I said, in 2 weeks, I'm going to preach 2 weeks every night. After 2 weeks, we're starting a church here. We did. Little old building. I bought the building from the local assembly of God Church and moved it out there, and we started a church. I drove by it the other day. They got about 6 big brick buildings. I started 16 churches in my life, and 10 of them are still going. Dr. Bob Gray the other day bought a church building in East Texas, in Gregton, Texas, as one of his buildings. He bought it, and it was a building that where I started a church under Tent Revival in Gregton, Texas, about 150 years ago. May I praise God again? I don't qualify to be in this group. And I am not even worthy to be called in the same sentence with these men. But there are 3 men in the history of the world that have seen 1 million people walk down the aisle under their preaching. Charles Spurgeon is not one. Lee Robertson is not one. 3 men, Dwight Moody, Billy Sunday, and Jack Hiles. Thank God I spent my youth and middle age casting my bread on the waters. Hey, you selfish people, enjoy yourself. You're in for a miserable old age one of these days. But if you'll cast your bread on the water, hey, keep working these bus routes and keep filling these Sunday school classes and keep knocking on doors and keep going to jailhouses and getting the gospel out. And one day, that bread's going to come back in. I've won souls to Christ in 17 foreign countries and 49 states. I had a spell the other day in my office. I don't mean a memory lapse like you had a while ago, and like you had a while ago, you stay in one. But I'm talking about, I was in my office and I had a spell. I got to thinking if Jesus came today, I got to picturing all these people are going to go up that I've won to Christ. I've won the folks to Christ in every state but North Dakota, and I'm going to go up there one of these days and win someone to the Lord just so it'll be unanimous. And then in 17 foreign countries, and I was thinking about the white rapture in my mind, I watched them rise. I'm saying my bread's coming back. So many ways. Old story. I love to tell it. I was preaching for Dr. Bob Gray in Longview. I rented a car in Dallas Airport, and I drove down and preached for Dr. Gray and was driving back. I got behind an accident. I had to sit still for 1 hour. I was going to miss my plane. And so I decided to do something I don't ever do, really. The old coot broke the speed limit. And I had to do it to get to the airport in Dallas so I could get back to Wednesday night service. Folks, I was going 100 miles an hour. Whee! But, oh, man, that sure was a lot of fun. All of a sudden looked up, and there it was. Pulled over beside the road. Fella gets out of the car. Where do you think you're going? I said, nowhere I'm going. I'm going to the airport in Dallas. Let me see your driver's license. I gave them to him. Hiles. Hiles. Are you Reverend Hiles? I don't know. Tell me what difference it makes. Are you Reverend Hiles? I said, yeah. That state patrolman began to weep. He put his ticket back in his pocket, put his pen back in his pocket, and looked at me, and he said, Reverend Hiles, 17 years ago, in my living room, you won my wife and me to Jesus Christ. He said, I'm going to heaven because you told me how to go. He said, you just follow me. Now, I didn't break the speed limit, but he was going 100, and I followed him. In fact, I think I passed him once or twice. Three thousand young men, have surrendered to preach in these over 50 years of preaching. I have 23 preacher boys in the Chicago area alone, pastoring churches. 17 preacher boys scattered across the state of Indiana. What a life. I'm just going around the country clipping coupons everywhere I go. Everywhere I go. I was down in Jacksonville preaching. Brother Messer, pastor of Trinity Baptist Church. Followed Dr. Bob Gray, the real Bob Gray. He followed him, and he walked up to me and he said, "Dr. Hodges, you don't know this, but I surrender to preach under your ministry." I was up in South Bend preaching years ago, and the artificial Dr. Bob Gray was there as a young man, sat on the front row, heard me preach, and decided he was going to be a preacher. Now, ladies and gentlemen, those are the three largest churches in America, independent Baptist churches, First Baptist Church Hammond, and the two, and the Trinity Baptist Church in Jacksonville, and the Longview Baptist Temple. Atlanta, Georgia, years ago, Dr. Curtis Hudson became a soul winner and attributed his soul winning and evangelism to me, my sermon many years ago, 1961. In Danville, Illinois, a young man came, got on fire for God, never won a soul to Christ, went out, built a great church, and now he's called Mr. Bus in America. His name is Wally Beebe. Chattanooga, Tennessee, I preached one night. Dr. Robertson, a basketball player, supposed to play a game that night. He came and heard me preach and then went to the game. His name was Steve Robertson. Told me later he surrendered to preach that night. I was in Springfield, Missouri, preaching. After the service, I was behind the pulpit and signing Bibles and shaking hands. About 1,000 people were there. Some Christian church preachers from the Christian College in Joplin, Missouri, had a curiosity to come over to see me and see what I look like, which is certainly worth your journey. They decided, shoot, let's get the old man to sign our Bible. And they came up, and I signed their Bibles, and one young man said, "I decided then to come to Howells Anderson College." His name is Rick Martin, the greatest missionary alive in the world today. But Bill Harvey heard me preach like this one time. He said, "You heard about Jack's new book?" I said, "What is it?" He said, "The world's 10 greatest soul winners and how I won the other 9. Every day. Literally every single day. Somebody comes to me, either they surrender to preach or got saved. Oh, okay, got a call the other day. There's a new pastor over here at East Chicago Church, Central Baptist Church, East Chicago. He wanted to see me. The church is GARB, General Association of Regular Baptists, a group pretty dead. So he took the church. He came to see me. He showed me a picture of him sitting right there. Remember the pastor's school when I gave the invitation? And if you'll be a friend of your life to preach the gospel, I'll be gone one of these days. Come and sit in my chair. There was this picture, friend to preach. And by the way, he opened it last week and said they pulled out the GARB last week. And by the way, we're going to ordain him in February here at our church. It's been that way all these years. Millions and millions of tapes. 13 million copies of my books. You say, "What are you trying to say?" I'm trying to say, if you want to be a happy old person, cast your bread on the waters while you're young. Some of you people living for yourself, all you're concerned about yourself, when you get 71 years of age, you're going to be so miserable. You're going to be ever notice anybody gets old and it gets real sweet or real crabby? You ever notice that? For example, I'm on one side of that, Depper's on the other side. Now you listen carefully to me. Now you listen, and I'm through. You are going one day to be old, unless God takes you to heaven. Now, when you get old, you're going to be happy only if you cast your bread on the waters while you're young and while you're in middle age. Now, you say, "Brother House, I can't preach having a million souls walk down the aisle." No, you can't, but you can sit out here and as Sunday school teachers and say, "I'm one of the teachers that taught Ed Lapina when he was a junior boy. And then I did some good things, too." one of our preacher boys down in Indianapolis, going to church down there. Don't you think you'd like to be a Sunday school teacher? My mother was a happy old lady. She lived to be 96 years of age, and she was happy. You know why she was happy? Because she spent her lifetime casting her bread on the waters. When she was in her 70s, she started the bus ministry at Lavon Drive Baptist Church, was the first bus captain, and she's in her 70s. And she gave her life to her children. One turned out good, and then there's my sister. Both of us in full-time service for God. Mother, why was Mother happy? Because she didn't live for herself. They that sow in tears shall reap in joy. He that goeth forth and weepeth very precious seed shall doubtless come again. I'll leave this little story with you and I'll close. Dr. Walter Wilson was a medical doctor. Dr. Wilson lived to be probably in his late 80s or 90. In fact, the first guest speakers I had here over 38 years ago had a conference, Dr. Walter Wilson and Dr. John R. Rice. Dr. Wilson was very ill. He was able to walk around the house, but he couldn't get outside the house. I was preaching in Kansas City, and Dr. Wilson had his wife. He had a young wife. His first wife died, and he married somebody, some gal about 40 years younger than he was. And so he called the church, and he said, would you tell Dr. Hiles I'd like to have him for lunch Tuesday? And the pastor told me that, and I said, you tell him I'll be there at about 1 o'clock Tuesday, have lunch with him. I went to his house, and Dr. Wilson was so happy, humorous even. We were eating, and he said, Dr. Howells, he said, my wife is a very strange woman. He says she likes to put extract of beef in her coffee. I said, extract of beef? Yeah, he said, some folks call it milk. And then I started to walk out, and the old man looked up and said, Dr. Howells, I won't tell you the secret of happiness, and I'll leave it with you. He said, I'm an old man. I've preached all over the world, medical doctor, but he also preached all over the world. One of the most gifted soul winners ever lived. And Dr. Wilson said, I want to give you the secret to my happiness as an old man, and I'll leave it with you. He said in Psalm 126, 6, he that goeth forth and weepeth bearing precious seed shall doubtless come again with rejoicing, bringing his sheaves with him. He said, you know what that really means? He said, it's my life's verse. It means he that goeth forth and weepeth, having a leaky seed basket. As you walk down the street, you have to put some holes in your seed basket and the seed is falling out all the time. He said, all my life, I've had a leaky seed basket. And now as an old man, I'm happy because I'm reaping the harvest of a life given to God. Now you listen to me carefully. You are going to be old. You teenagers, I used to be a teenager. And you're going to be old one of these days. You go ahead and live your life for yourself, and just me and ours, and us, and mine, and we, go ahead. Just go right ahead. But get ready for a pretty miserable old age. But those of you young people here, you college people who went out and worked those bus routes yesterday, man, one of these days you're going to shout the praises of God as all of a sudden that bread you cast on the water. I've got to tell you, I've got 10,000 stories. I'm only going to tell you about 1,000 of them. You know the story. Those of you who have been here for years, nobody. There's a wall right here in this building. And this is typical of everywhere I go. I will see in Mexico City tomorrow night, I will see no less than 10 missionaries and pastors who are called to preach under my ministry. There's a wall right here. I stood about right here when the building was half the size it is now and preached a funeral service of a little 4-year-old boy. sitting right up there in the balcony, almost by herself, was a Spanish-speaking lady, a Mexican lady, and I did not know it. And the next Sunday, she was up there again. I did not know it. Suddenly, by the way, she had a beautiful fur coat on. I mean, she was immaculately dressed and obviously a lady of some wealth. She walked down that aisle right there and motioned for me. And I went back there to the opening there of the aisle, at the end of the aisle, and I said, what is it? And she said, no hablo inglés. That means I don't know English, don't speak English. And I said, I know just enough Spanish. I know several words, tamales, enchiladas, tacos, tortillas. And so I spoke to an interpreter, though, over here. And I said, why are you coming down now? And she said, well, I want to get saved. And I said, well, how could you understand what I said? Again, through the interpreter. How could you understand my sermon? She said, didn't understand the words you said. Well, I said, well, what made you come forward? And she said, it looked so good. She said, I came to the funeral of a four-year-old boy. It was a relative. I sat up there in the balcony and I couldn't understand what you were saying, but I could understand your tears. I could understand the pathos in your voice. And she said, it looked so good. I want to get it. And she got saved that day because it looked so good. Now, all that to say this. About two or three years ago, I was preaching in San Antonio. When I got through preaching, people came up, and I signed their Bibles, and a very wealthy-looking couple came up, older couple. And the man said, Tiles, we retired down here in South Texas. And he said, we came to hear you preach tonight. He said, I think you'll know my wife. Said, she can't speak English, but I think you'll know her. I said, I'm sorry, but it's been so many years. Sure, how long has it been? He told me 25, 30 years since I lived here. And I said, I'm sorry, I don't know her. He said, I think you do. And she had learned how to speak in English, one sentence. She looked at me, she was a young lady back yonder. She said, it looks so good. And I said, are you that little lady who came down the aisle? She said, yes, and tonight I didn't understand through the interpreter. I didn't understand the word you said tonight either, but it still looks good. They that sow in tears shall reap in joy. He that goeth forth and weepeth bearing precious seeds shall doubtless come again with rejoicing. Bring your sheaves with him. Cast thy bread upon the waters, and it shall return. Not today, not tomorrow, not next week, but after many days. Tonight.